At Arizona State University, we've made online education better, smarter, and more personalized so you can go further in your aspiring field.
I decided to pursue medicine once I realized that ASU did have the online program for biological sciences. You're still required to learn the same curriculum. You're still being tested on the same content that anyone would be tested on in person. The comprehensiveness of the program prepared me so well for medical school.
Explore over 350 plus programs at asuonline.asu.edu.
The specialists are back, and episode 9 of The Traders is over, and we are no closer to a conclusion because we were left with a totally cringeworthy cliffhanger. Will, why do shows still do this? Why?
I mean, I understand why you would do this. It's like a big format part of The Traders is that you murder or you banish someone at the round table, and then you go and the traders meet and they choose to murder someone, and that's the cliffhanger of the episode, and you don't know. In this episode, we got a murder at the front. We got to see Kate and Phaedra come together and make a murder as predicted by who saw that coming? We'll have to figure out who keeps having the worst wrong takes on this podcast, and that's what the comments say, and then to come back and basically predict everything that's happening. We saw a murder fully in the first part of this episode. So it's not like we were robbed in elimination. You also have to take into account this is on Peacock. This is a streaming service. You know, probably 95% of the people who ever watch this show will be watching it when all episodes have been released. And they want that user, that viewer, to hit next episode and watch the next one. So, yes, we have to pay the price here as live viewers who are following weekly, but that's not going to be the case for the vast majority of the people who enjoy this on Peacock. So I totally understand it. I'm not too bent out of shape by it. I actually think it gives us something to talk about. And if you slow down the freeze, if you like, you know, pause, freeze frame, go frame by frame, they show MJ turn her little chalkboard around, and I am like probably 80 to 85% sure I know who it is. I will not say that this early in the podcast. If that's something we do want to talk about later, then we absolutely can do that. I don't want to spoil it for anybody.
Sign in.
But yeah, I'm not too upset about it.
All right. Well, for those of you who are returning to us, like this video and subscribe to our channel. And if you're one of the people who really fucking hates us, like this video and subscribe to our channel so you can continue fucking hating us. Because, man, Will, you were getting roasted last week. But you're right. You have been right a lot of times. Yeah. I need to go see this now, though. I need to see what's going on here. Really, what we got the biggest flack for was that Sandra. We said we think Sandra is going to end up winning. I think at this point, what's funny is Sandra could be one of six people who wins. That doesn't mean she was necessarily very good at the game. She just is one of six people. Her reads have been really terrible, though. And that was one of the comments we got. And tonight, her still voting for Peter. What is that all about?
Well, I think Peter made a very, very good point in this roundtable here where he's like, if you know who one of the traitors are, you should just keep them in so you can eliminate them at the end of the game and not let them, like, whoever the other trader is, or if there's only one left, let them get replaced or let them recruit. He makes it very clear that that is an optimal strategy and that he knew Parv was a trader. So he did want to work with her to keep Parv in the game, and then they can eliminate her later without her being replaced. Mm-hmm. Totally fair. Also, great argument to kill you right now, Peter, for everyone who thinks it's Phaedra. Like, if you're Sandra, oh, Peter, you're right. Okay, now I'm just going to kill you. Because I want to keep Phaedra in the game. So I understand what he was saying. He was defending his relationship with Dan and Parv as that continued to unwind. But in doing so, anyone who was on the fence and thought, hey, you know what, Phaedra probably is the traitor, but that's not necessarily a bad thing if she stays in the game. Mm-hmm. That was at least my take on Peter's defense, is that he kind of screwed himself over.
Yeah, now, if... how does this work? And maybe somebody in the comments can say it if you're not 100%. When they get to the end, I know that they did it last year where if everybody threw in whatever color stone or whatever color bag or whatever it was, it would end the game. But if one person threw in a different color, everybody voted. I don't remember how it was actually supposed to play out because Ari just ended up quitting. So does everybody vote, or does just the person who throws in the other color vote?
I don't even know what we're talking about at this point, Bill. That was a long time ago. Again, I everyone gets mad. At Caesars or Traders season one just didn't really pay much attention. I know they get together and they stand around and they do something. Is that what you're trying to figure out?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out at the very end of the game. And the biggest problem right now is when you watch this on the computer, you can't see it really well in there. But when they get to the end of the game, they stood around. It was Quentin, Andy, Ari, and Sari. And the way that it worked was you stood there, and if everybody threw in one color, the game would end and the votes and the money would be split unless there were traders and the traders would steal it. And if one person threw in a different color, they could force another vote. But because Ari quit right at that moment, I don't actually remember. So Thomas McGee here says everybody votes. That's how it happens.
I think he kind of quit after they already voted to vote. They're like, we're going to have a vote.
They voted to vote.
No, they didn't. What I mean. They already voted to vote. They already said, we are going to eliminate someone. And at that point,
Sari did. Quentin and Andy wanted nothing to do with it. Sari did. And then that's when he knew he was screwed. But you're saying I'm protecting you right now, because if you say they chose to do this or they decided to vote,
but they all
Sari was
they,
the only one who decided to vote.
Okay, but they all played a stone. They all cast a vote. I'm not saying which side they voted for or what option they chose. They all made their choice.
Mm-hmm.
Then Sari was the only one who said, no, I think there's a traitor left among us. At that point, Ari was like, all right, you know what? You guys got it. I'll leave.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So what's your question?
My question is, because Ari quit, does everybody then vote? Like, everybody still votes, even though Sari's the only one who put her stone on, right?
I would imagine. Yeah. Because then if Ari doesn't quit, then I think they either do a private vote or they do a just point and vote, like point 3-2-1, point if you, who you want eliminated, point at who you think's a traitor. I don't think they bring out the chalkboards necessarily, but I'm sure they do some sort of like 3-2-1 point.
So there's so what I'm getting at there is, if Sandra were to get down to the end and think that Phaedra was a traitor, and it's her, it's Trishel, it's CT, and it's, you know, Phaedra John. And John. Yeah. John's still there. Of course.
John's not going home.
You're going to be able to take that moment to say, okay, now we're going to vote Phaedra out. The problem is, it by doing that and making that your strategy, you are also, though, banking on the fact that there's only one traitor left. Because you might think it's Phaedra and know it's Phaedra and you vote out Phaedra, but if Kate is still in the game, you might not say, okay, now we're also going to vote out Kate, because you haven't had time to actually pin it on Kate.
Yeah, but that's going to happen anyway. And if you vote out Phaedra now, then likely Kate gets to recruit someone anyway. So it's like, then you're back to square one, unless she picks you as the traitor, unless that's your end game. Mm-hmm. But I think the great strategy is, if you have someone for sure that you know is a traitor, keep them in, work, and don't tell them. Don't let them know that you know, and then watch them and try to use that information to figure out who they're working with and who they're in cahoots with. I think that's the way it's done. And so if I'm sitting at this table tonight and I'm like, pretty sure it's Phaedra, I'm still probably voting Peter out. Like, and we haven't, and I don't know if the show wants to really lean into that. Like, we've talked about this before. Like, the show works because it's a group of people who don't know who these traitors are, and the traitors know who each other are, and their job is to find them and sift them out. If the show doesn't live up to that premise where that's the goal, if the round table becomes this other goal, and that's, I'm actually surprised they kind of include the thing that Peter said, it's like, then the show might lose its very fabric. So I don't know.
We talked about that last week a lot. I do think, like, that's my biggest problem though is, okay, so even if you know, okay, I'm feeling good about Phaedra, is this, I'm still gonna vote for Peter tonight. The problem is, there's still a murder. And I don't think we're done with the murders after the next murder. Alan hasn't said after the next
murder. No, of course. Oh, there's still, yeah, we're nine people left. We have eight people left after either Phaedra or Peter go home. There's only going to be eight. Exactly. So it's like there's plenty of time for murder. Someone will get murdered the next night.
But what I'm saying is, you're taking a huge risk.
Right, but you have to then play the game in that role to, like, make sure the traitor wants to keep you in the game. Like, mm-hmm. if I know it's Phaedra, I'm going to be not tossing Phaedra's name out. I'm going to be maybe having conversations with her. Like, yeah, I will vote with you no matter what. Like, you know, you can't lay it on too thick, but there are strategies where you that you can make to reduce your chances of getting murdered. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And right now, Sandra feels like she's off of everybody's radar.
Yeah, I mean, Sandra's name has not come up as a likely traitor target until tonight, it seems like. CT and Trishelle kind of thought Sandra and Phaedra were working together after what happened to the challenge, which to me, this made absolutely no sense. I don't know if you're watching this. This whole thing with going diagonally across and that Trishelle's name was on her own area. Like, were you following this logic at all? Because I was sitting there being like, this makes no sense. I don't know what they're talking about. And I was kind of lost.
What, you don't know what CT's point was?
I understand what it was, but I think it was very faulty. And there's a couple reasons why. But you can explain it if you want. I know what he was saying. You know, if we aim up high where there's three targets, then if you miss, then one of the other ones will break.
The reason it was sketchy is because they were all going in order so that it was easiest to hit. They started with the bottom middle because then it was easier to move right to left. So then they moved left and then they moved up and it was easiest to go in that order. So you were barely moving the thing.
Why is because it easiest to go in that order?
Because moving the thing, they said that it was sending it in stray directions. So what they were doing is they were trying to just barely move it each time. So you would start off, you would keep aiming at the same target, moving it very little until you hit that one. And then you would move it a small amount to the next one so that you're not completely resetting, because they said it was really hard to reset it.
It seemed like it wasn't that hard to reset it, though. That's not what happened at all.
This is what the players were saying.
I know, but it didn't compute for me, because it seemed like someone at some point said it was easier to move it up and down than left to right or something.
No, it was easier to move it left to right than up and down.
Okay, either way, if you look at what targets were hit, the bottom row clearly was one of the easier rows to hit, because that's what they hit first, and you had the left one out and left out center. No, they started at John top center, Phil, and they missed a bunch of times, and they moved down to the bottom.
What was the first one they hit, Will?
I don't know. Who was it?
Bottom middle. Okay, continue. That's where they started.
I said bottom.
Strategy.
I know, but I said bottom.
Strategy.
Okay, but then you have the whole bottom row is hit. To me, it looked like the higher row was the most difficult because the angle of the whatever we're calling this, I know they called it a crossbow. It wasn't really a crossbow. I guess it was a
crossbow, yeah.
But the crossbow, the angle of it, I think allowed the bottom row to actually be easier than going up high. And they had aimed at CT's name a bunch of times. I think at least they said they lost over $2,000 on it. So I think it was at least 9 straight misses. So Pedro's like, okay, we've missed it 9 straight times. Let's look at the bottom row. That's where we started. And then guess what? Phaedra moves there and they hit Trishelle's what? Did Phaedra hit it on her first try? Or was the next try?
Who knows?
I mean, it just looks like the bottom row is completely easier than the top row, because we saw them aim for John at first and it was really hard. We saw them miss CT, like I said, at least 9 times. And then who else was on the top right? We had the top right person was, I forget. But it just seemed to me. If I were Phaedra, I would have been like, guys, it was really hard to hit the top row. We had kept missing CT. I don't think she defended herself that well. But also there was, Trishelle was making the argument that hers was all on her own, in that like if you aimed at hers and missed, there was no chance of getting anyone else's. That hadn't been anything happening all challenge. It looked like no one missed a target and then hit another one and was successful. That never happened. And when you missed, they were very spread out. And when you missed, it was always missing like by, you know, a couple inches. It wasn't like this crazy thing, you know, like Survivor Second Chance is when Steven hits the other team's target with the slingshot. That's not really what was ever going to happen here. So I just felt all these arguments were super thin on that side of things. And I thought Phaedra could have just defended herself better.
Yeah. I think like Phaedra did a bad job defending herself, but I think the other problem is too, in order for this game to end, you have to have one remaining. So at this point, everybody had it set up in some way, or they had it positioned where even if they kept missing CT, they might've been getting closer, closer, closer. you need to take out that whole top row, or at least you need to take out two of the three in the top row. And right. Now you're repositioning the entire thing and shooting lower. I think you
and they got it.
Would be a terrible
and,
trader.
And they spot. Got it. I would be at least having an argument for defending myself. But if even if I were a trader or a faithful and I went up, I'd be like, guys, look, we've missed this. This is the top left corner. This is literally there are two, the top left and the top right corner are the furthest targets away, right? Because this crossbow is lower than the stained glass. So the bullet or the dowel, the wooden, whatever, I don't know what everything's calling
bolt.
It.
I think the they were calling bolt, it
the bolt has to travel the farthest to the top row and especially the ones that are off center. So the top left corner and the top right corner. So if I'm playing that game, I'm saying, guys, get the bottom row first. Those are, that's the closest. Mm-hmm. That is the easiest to hit. And so I don't know. I thought also just from a challenge, I think this was fun because look, I like that we're even talking about the challenge. So I like that part of it.
I do have a couple questions for you about this though, but I agree that it's good that the challenge is actually a part of this episode, but
right. It actually had meaning. And then it really wasn't so much about the money. It was about who's going to get a shield. And I think even if CT was wrong, and I honestly don't even think Phaedra was like, oh, Trishel can't get a shield, especially because like, if you really want Trishel gone, they have a good amount of numbers where they can probably turn the vote on her and just, mm-hmm. you know, banish her. If that was really the plan, I don't think they were too worried about that. But I don't know. What were your questions, Phil?
Well, first, I want to say for anybody who's listening, like the video. We have to keep saying it over and over again. So like the video. Please like the video. And subscribe to the channel. Let's get the subscriber count up. We keep getting views, but the subscriber count, get that up. If you're somebody who's been listening to us, get that subscriber count up. Even if you're listening over on iTunes, Spotify, which by the way, if you want to listen on Audioboom, I'm able to set up playlists. So if you're like, hey, I really only want to do it on, I only want to listen to Survivor Second Chances, or I only want to listen to the Traders, go over to Audioboom and there's a whole playlist of just the Traders episodes that you can listen to them and not have like all the other stuff. So if you download that app, you can use it that way. Anyway. My main question here with this challenge, because this challenge was totally based on the last one standing, is going to get a shield. They put Peter in the middle. They put him smack in the middle. Has to be the easiest one to hit. We just talked about, you just talked about, maybe warranted or unwarranted, how up in the top left corner, that is the hardest spot to hit. So they put Peter, who's in the most danger of being banished, that the producers know is not a traitor, smack in the middle and the easiest target to hit. How did they determine who was going to get put where for this challenge?
Well, I do think the bottom row ended up being the easiest because that's the shortest distance the bolt had to travel. If I were producing this challenge, and I imagine, you know, they have to abide by American game show law and have all, I mean, there is prize money here. So this goes through lawyers and compliance and everything, is you would basically have all these tiles made. You could also tell they considered doing this challenge earlier in the season because mm-hmm. we had three empty panels below. It was supposed to be a 3x4 panel. And then maybe something with Deontay or Kate coming in, whatever. Maybe they didn't ever have the number to play it at 12. I don't know if we ever had exactly 12 people left or they had something else planned, whatever. But you would basically just have all the stained glass names and then you would just draw a name out of a hat, put that top left, and then just go down the line. And you just randomize it. So
it's randomized and it just so happened that Peter
that's
smack in the middle.
That's what you're supposed to do. I mean, there's an over 10% chance of that happening. I mean, someone's got to end up in the middle. There's only 9 people left.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you're just a little sus on that.
I mean, I'm not suspect on it. I'm not. I just wanted to know what you thought the reason was, because for Peter to be smack in the middle when the whole conversation has been around him, Thomas McGee just said, were the names in alphabetical order? Were they in alphabetical order?
That's possible, too. That's another way.
Because Trishel was bottom right. Sheree was next to her. Phaedra, I think, was Sandra was bottom left. Phaedra was, yeah. So they actually were in alphabetical order.
That's another way where left. you can take bias out of it. I mean, we saw that in season one of Survivor where it's like, I'm just going to go alphabetical order, voting people off. That's what Sean wanted to do. Yeah. Wait, John, was it Sean? It was Sean.
It was Sean, Dr. Sean. Yeah, come on.
Dr. Sean. I was just getting confused. And then we saw in the trust, a game of greed. People went in to make an offer when they would block people's votes. And they had the list of everyone in the game. And they're just like, let's just go down the order of the list. That's a big strategy in this game, is just to take out, you know, personal bias or randomness and just go in alphabetical order. So that is a fair way to do it, to set up a challenge. Like, look, we're just, whoever's left, we're putting your names in alphabetical order, that you could shift up, you could shift, you know, left or right, depending on who's in the game. So if anyone complains, you're like, sorry, that's the alphabet. Like, there's no bias in it.
Yeah, and CT just, it happened to work out for him in this situation where he gets the shield. So
I was just surprised how hard they made shooting this thing. Like, I know you can't make it too easy where you don't get any misses, but it felt like the hit to miss ratio was probably like 30 or 40% lower than where you'd ideally want it.
Well, let me ask you this one, because we were talking about this, and this doesn't matter to probably anybody who's listening to this podcast, but I just wonder from a production standpoint, they are at $129,000 or something. We have one episode left, and they're supposed to be playing for a prize pool of up to $250,000. Are they going to lump in all $121,000 next year? Because I'm going to be honest, it seems like these people have kind of sucked.
I thought it's over $100,000 right now.
It's at $129,000. That's what I just said.
It's at $129,000. Okay. And it's $200 or $250,000. You think $250,000?
So that's what I'm saying. They have $121,000 still left as a gap.
I think they want to get it somewhere. I don't know if it needs to go all the way up to $250,000. I feel like you want to either break $200,000, like $205,000, somewhere in there, or at least you have to crack $190,000. Like, you have to at least get it close to $200,000. I think if it's like $167,000, that's kind of, it feels kind of lame. So I imagine they'll give
initially, if you have six people or five people at the end splitting that, like, these are reality TV stars. Some of these are housewives of, like, they're like multimillionaires. This is not a big, I think probably every single person left in the game at this point is a multimillionaire. So splitting like splitting $155,000 would be a waste of time.
Between six. Yeah, no, they got to get that thing up, and we better not have six winners splitting it.
So, okay, so you say you could see it. I tried to slow it down. I tried to figure it out. Do we want to put a massive spoiler warning here at the 22-minute mark?
I don't know. What else do you want to talk about? I mean, let's talk about Kate before we get there. And just, I know you have said clearly you're not a fan of Kate. She bugs you. I was like, whatever. I'm kind of indifferent on Kate. Now that you've seen her in the traitor role, has that changed your mind? Has that done anything for you?
She was probably better because she didn't talk as much. I mean, truthfully, she really wasn't that big a part of this episode. And I'm curious how much of it was being played up, which I'm sure a lot of it was, because this is the type of show that plays stuff up. But when she was talking about how she's like, she got to remember, she's a faithful, Peter's a traitor. She's a faithful, Peter's a traitor. I just feel like Kate is Kate. I don't think her game really changed all that much, even though she was trying to act like it was changing. We'll see what ends up happening next week. If anything goes down, my biggest takeaway though, Will, and I think you knocked it out of the park last week, you said it was going to be pretty easy for Kate to play as a traitor. I really think that's the case. And this isn't a knock on Kate. Okay. I'll get my knocks in on Kate when I can. But this isn't a knock on Kate. I just think she's in a really good spot right now. And even if Phaedra goes home this week, even if Phaedra is the name on that paper, who's looking at Kate saying, oh my God, it must be Kate? Because Kate being volatile to the people bringing up Phaedra's name, that's Kate. That's what she does. She likes to be volatile. So, yeah, that's it.
No, that's what I got. I think Kate's in a great spot. I think she did well as a traitor here. It was weird. At breakfast, though, MJ walks in and says, like, what happened to Kate? Your energy is so different. Like, it is pretty insane. You don't often see that happen. But outside of MJ calling her out right there, Kate played this great. I think she's being herself. She has this idea that, hey, I'm still technically a faithful. Like, she's trying to trick herself into maintaining this faithful attitude. And that, I think, is going to go a long way for her. Like, if she can just kind of play up her nonchalant, whatever, I don't care, you're a traitor, I don't like you. Like, if she can just play that up, She's got a very, very good chance to win this thing where no one sniffs Kate out as a traitor.
Yeah. I also think that, okay, Kate fans, Kate stans, all the people who leave nasty comments about me. I actually think this is a great strategy from Kate. I think it's a great strategy. I was actually thinking about this after she got done. I said to myself, is that how I would try to play? Where the entire time I would try to play the game as if I was, like, even saying to yourself, if you get picked at the beginning as a faithful and you're not a traitor, do you almost play a little wishy-washy the way Peter has played this game and think to yourself, okay, let's play this as a traitor just in case I come up as somebody who could be a traitor? Because making that switch deep in the game is kind of hard not to have a reaction, right? It's hard not to get that smile on your face internally and move forward. So I actually think this is a really good strategy from Kate of just convince yourself over and over again. Keep repeating yourself that you're a traitor. Don't even think about how I'm, or keep repeating yourself that you're a faithful. Don't even allow yourself to think of yourself as a traitor and let that play.
Yeah, I do believe if I were a traitor, I would be like, all right, I'm going to try to play this as a faithful. I'm going to act like a faithful. And then I would, you know, how I would play a faithful would be like throwing names out, trying to rally votes against people playing way too hard. And everyone like, you're playing way too hard. You must be a traitor, which often never is the case. Like the first, like what, 5 or 6 episodes, it was like, man, you're tossing out too many names. You're accusing people too much. You must be a traitor. And it was like faithful, 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 faithful. So, yeah, I would probably play too hard and go home, I think.
I mean, that
would be a good strategy to implore, for sure.
And you're the king of freezing cold takes, because as Goombas 3040 says, how was CT's logic wrong when he came to the proper conclusion about Phaedra after the group decided to do it where there was as little movement as possible? Like, Will, you make yourself sound like a traitor as you try to defend Phaedra here.
Okay, first of all, I don't think it was super clear what the reasoning is, because Trishelle had different reasoning. Trishelle's reasoning that mine was all alone and we were going for the group in case we missed, that we could ricochet and still knock a target out. So that was definitely part of the reasoning, which I think was really like wrong, because we did not see anyone shoot for a name and hit another name. It was really dialed in. It was really specific, obviously really tough aim. And everyone was missing by like a couple inches high or a couple inches low. So that never happened. I think that was invalid. And then on the movement part, again, I wasn't, they vocalized, it's hard. Yeah, it's hard to move, but you've already, at some point you have to say, hey, wait a second. We've hit 2 of the 3 bottom row. In the top row, we are 0-for. We have missed 9 times. I don't know how many times I have to say this. 9 times in a row on CT, which I know we don't care about the money, but that is costing them money every single time they do that. It's $250 every single time they miss. They'd already missed John, I think, 2 or 3 times, at least 3 times, maybe 4 times. So you're almost 0-for-15 on the top row. And so Phaedra is like, guys, the bottom row is like way easier. Can we maybe try that?
What, so what makes it sketchy for Phaedra, though, is she's been at odds with Trishelle the entire time. So for her to go and be the one to make the decision for the group is sketchy.
I hear that. And I think if I were a traitor, I wouldn't, you know, upset the apple cart. I would not be the one that wants to change up the plan. And I don't think that Phaedra was wise in making that decision. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying it seems like, if you were a traitor or a faithful, if I get up there after 9 misses and I see we're 2 out of 3 on the bottom row, at some point I'm gonna be like, hey guys, we should just go for the bottom row. It's clearly easier, whether you're a faithful or a traitor. Like, it doesn't really matter. You're just trying to get through the game at this point.
Here, and I'll explain it for you better. There you go. I just like how CT did this exact
draw. I did like how he did it. I liked how he did that. That brought me great joy. It was really fun. It was just like for me, I don't even think that's how Phaedra was thinking. Like, I don't, yeah. you know, it's like Phaedra's goal wasn't like, I'm going to sneakily try to just target Trishelle. I
disagree with that. I think she wanted to make sure Trishelle couldn't get that. I almost guarantee you Trishelle is getting murdered as soon as this is over.
Potentially, but they have other targets they can take out. I do believe it wasn't that absurd to move the thing, and that a faithful could have easily done that and been like, guys, this current strategy is completely failing us. So why are we so married to the strategy that isn't working?
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, but I think Phaedra's going to murder Trishelle. I think that's happening. Okay, so Okay, we're at the 29. We're at 29 minutes. We have one episode left. So before we even talk about Peter and Phaedra and who you think you can read on that parchment when you slow it down and extra zoom in, how is this ending? How many people are left at the end of this game? How many people are going to that final ceremony and trying to get rid of each other? We have nine.
I don't know. I feel like we have to have. I think we have to have that conversation after we talk about who we think is getting banished from this roundtable.
But okay, but let's,
because that will heavily inform our discussion of that. So I don't think we should try to like dance around.
Okay, but okay, so I guess topic. Okay,
but like we can talk about something else. Is this? Else we can talk about.
Well, let me ask you this then, before we talk about whatever you want to talk about, before we get into the Phaedra versus Peter, how many people do you think they are willing to have after what they're calling the final roundtable? Like, will the final roundtable always be five people?
Is that what it was last season?
I think that's what it was last season, because it was four after that.
So they stepped out to that like circle area
at
four. I could see that thing happening at five, though. Like, I could see the final roundtable being six.
Because you have to think, we have to get a banishment, a murder. That brings it down to seven. A banishment, a murder, and then the final banishment.
Like, wait, is next week the finale?
As far as I know, yeah.
Huh. Are we sure there's not just one extra episode? Because that's what seems kind of perfect. Just have an extra episode.
I think that I think that the one after this is like a reunion of some sort.
Okay. Before we get into the ending of the show, let's talk about this roundtable. I thought this was really good. I don't think Phaedra did all that well to defend herself. It seems like she had her people. And I don't know if anyone was swayed by this roundtable. I thought it was really good. I thought it was intense. I love the Phaedra line. I don't have to kiss your ass for a rose. I think that that's the stuff we love to hear. Also, Peter subtly dropped, like, I got your letter, Phaedra, and I said no. Like, he has he has not made this public to anybody. And I think this was him coming out, kind of swinging in a way. And you could look at it like, oh my gosh, he's swinging for the fences because he's a traitor. Or like, he needs to just empty every bullet he has against Phaedra. Because then she's like, what letter? What are you talking about? Like, it was so good. And I wonder if this will come up, that Peter did get recruited and said no. We have seen no discussion or talk of this since it happened. So I did think it was very interesting for Peter to kind of spill the beans and blab that out. I mean, I know it's like a token of honor among the faithfuls to be like, I was recruited. I think he told like three people or four people, like, but it's not public information, right?
Mm-hmm. He had told them all.
Like Kevin, he told Kevin, Trishel, he told Bergie, and John.
It was pretty much his crew.
Kevin and Bergie are gone. So I think only John and Trishel are the only ones remaining that know that. So for him to say that in front of, the other, I guess there's what, six more people are now finding this out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, so a bunch of people are finding this out right now. I thought Peter did a really good job. I think what the biggest problem is, this goes into our other discussion, right? If Peter makes this argument, and this argument is as sound as the argument Peter's making, but they still elect to vote out Phaedra because they just want to weaken that side of numbers. The thing is, if Peter goes home here and then Trishel gets murdered, CT, John, Sandra can say, Sheree, are you joking right now? MJ, are you joking? You're really like, Peter just went home. It has to be Phaedra. We have to get rid of Phaedra. And Sheree or MJ will probably make the flip. But that's where getting rid of the traitors at every opportunity isn't actually what the name of this game is. And that's where this argument from Peter, and I think even if you disagree with the way that CT and Trishel spelled it out, I think there's enough evidence. I like John's whole pitch at the beginning of this. I think there's enough evidence that supports what they're saying. There's enough sketchiness from Phaedra.
There's other arguments, clearly.
Yeah, the Parvati Dan thing is perfect from John. And yet they're still going to vote out Peter. So is that a flaw in the game, or is that a good thing for the game?
I think it's a changing game. I think it provides good, at least when there's reason and strategies for the way you're playing to win, I think makes it for a more intriguing, enjoyable viewing experience, as opposed to like, I don't know what's going to happen next. Let's hope and pray I don't get murdered. Like, at least you have some thought to it. So I think that's probably a good thing. But it's just finding that middle ground where it doesn't take over the game, that becomes the whole idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I could see Peter going home, Trishel getting murdered. And let's say even next week they say, okay, then CT goes home and then they murder John. And now the final five is Sandra, Phaedra. Who else is it? It's Kate, Sheree, and MJ. That's your final five. And I could see MJ, Sandra, and Sheree saying, let's vote for Phaedra now because we can. And then they vote out Phaedra. So now when they
turn on Sandra and Kate wins.
And Kate wins.
With Sheree and MJ.
But Kate would be the winner. MJ and Sheree would end up winning with nothing.
If you had to make your winner pick right now, I think
Kate is my winner pick right now.
Like, it has to be. She's sitting in absolutely the best spot, and no one's got eyes on her. No one's really looking at her except for MJ. And MJ did have this very big line that I'm going into this roundtable very open-minded. I'm willing to hear you. I am not completely decided. Like, I'm not just going to vote with the Bravo Alliance. Like, if you make a good argument, I do want to get a traitor out. And of course, we get all that because this 4-4 vote is now coming down to MJ. That's why they set it up that way, and it is very suspenseful. Also, here in this episode, we often don't really hear this from the traders or the faithfuls, just the players in general. It's like, how many people are left and how many votes you need. I thought it was just unique tonight where they're like, all right, 9 people are left. We need 5 for a majority. It's like, yeah, for sure. And it's just funny when there's like 18 people left, you just don't hear that talk because there's just so many people. You can't really, it's just about drumming up suspicion as best you can and then hoping people vote the way you want them to. So I kind of like that. I like that. It was like, man, this is going to be a 5-4 vote. Like, that's awesome.
It really had the feeling of Marquesas. It really did. It had the feeling of that final 9 of Marquesas of, this is our chance to flip it from 6-3 to 5-4. I don't know what's going to happen. Logically, if you're playing to game the game to get the traitors out, I think what Peter and Trishel and CT are saying makes sense. And John, I think it makes sense. But if you're playing the game to get near the end with somebody you know is a traitor because you need to get rid of faithfuls and make sure you have the numbers. Because here's the other aspect that many people might not be thinking of right now. If they get rid of Phaedra tonight, you are now down to 4 versus 4. And you don't know who the other traitor, if there's another traitor, is. So if they decide to vote out one of the Bravo women after that, they're down to 3. And I'm counting Sandra in with the Bravo women at this point because she's playing with them. So now they're down to 3 of them. And you have, on the other side, 4 people. They can just take all of you out and then do the same thing that you're going to try to do to them.
Exactly.
Which is eliminate and then just get to the end and say, okay, are any of the people in my alliance traitors? That's the crazy part. So it actually is probably the smartest move for the Bravo women plus Sandra to vote out Peter in this moment.
Yes, and that's what I had already said. And he made that case for them. He told them, you guys should probably just vote me out and keep Phaedra in because I know Phaedra's a traitor.
Yep.
So let's break the ice here. Let's give a nice 10-15 second buffer. We are going to talk about who we think MJ voted for. And when we say think, we're not talking about game sense or what the person did. We're talking about we freezed the show and tried to
Will did. This is news to me.
Yes.
All right.
So is that enough of a buffer?
We're going to go at 39 minutes. And if you're listening on Audio Boom, if there's a 30-second ad at the beginning, it's going to be 39:30 or something like that. But essentially a 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Who did she vote for?
I am fairly certain that MJ voted for Peter.
Okay. And I think it makes the most sense.
Yeah, I'm looking actually online, like on Reddit, if there's like a, did somebody also get a better screen grab or look at it? So let me just see.
I'm going to read off Thomas McGee's comment here while you say that. He says, I agree with Phil and Will. I think Cade has a good chance to win. That's the benefit of being recruited late. No one has a chance to get much evidence on you. And Ari was able to succeed with that last year, even though he didn't end up winning. But that was because Sari just played him. Ryan Chan, 9 people in the finale. That is Redemption Island level of most people in a final episode. I'm pretty sure next week, I just saw it on Screen Rant where it said that next week is the finale and then March 6th is like a reunion thing. But maybe they misunderstood that.
I feel like you would do the reunion on the night of the finale. No one wants to finish the show and then tune back in a week later for a reunion.
They did that last year, though. They did like the post-mortem thing later.
Yeah, I guess on a streamer, it's easier to get away with because, like I said, most people who watch this are going to just be able to click through all the episodes. I am looking at the Traders Reddit here, and I do see a comment. I'm going to give this comment some chop, and the name is "What is her job - tables." I don't know what that is referencing, but here's the comment, and it's got some upvotes on it. You know what? I'm gonna upvote it also.
Wow. People should like the video if they're still here. Will's upvoting on Reddit. You can upvote this, it costs nothing.
Yeah, here is the comment. I don't get the whole fuss over breaking Trichelle's glass. Number one, They already stated the bottom row was the easiest to start at. Two, they missed CTs 7 times in a row.
And oh, you said 9, so you were wrong.
No, but it was 9 because Alan had said like $2,250. So if it's $250 divided by 2250, that's 9. So, so it was 9 times. Number three, for some reason, they all collectively decided to ignore Trichelle's glass on the bottom row. Four, the shift in direction actually worked and broke their bad streak by getting Trichelle so quickly. Number five, 8 other people also got the glasses broken. Why is it suddenly such a big deal for Trichelle, but no one else is apparently allowed to be upset that people targeted them? Why is Trichelle the only one it's suddenly suspicious to not go for? I don't know. That whole thing sounded like bullshit and didn't think it was as hard a proof as CT.
When did you write that comment? Was that between the episode?
Even if it's, true that Phaedra is a traitor, you can still have flawed logic but land at the correct answer. Amen. Okay.
Okay. That had nothing to do with the spoilers. I mean, my goodness. Now you've gone 2 full minutes without spoiling anything.
I know, but I was trying to find if someone put the screen grab on Reddit. So I will tell you what I saw. I went back. I tried to do quick pause frame by frame. I watched it on an Xbox. I have the Peacock app. So you can't really go frame by frame, but you can just pause. So I just did pause right when she flipped. And they're actually pretty lucky here. And not lucky, I should say, but like they were able to show the turn because MJ writes really, really small. Okay, like yeah, her handwriting, right. Her votes are always very tiny, and it's no different here. So this vote is tiny, but from looking at the chalk, from looking at the vote, I would be very surprised if it was Phaedra, because there just isn't that many letters. It doesn't look like I can't read the name Peter
even with how small her handwriting is,
but like, yeah, but like Peter is what, it's 5 letters in Phaedra is what, 7 letters? Seven. So it's not a huge difference, but it definitely looks like a shorter name. I could be wrong. That's what I'm saying. About 85, 80, yeah, 80.
So it's not really a spoiler. This
it's not a spoiler.
I couldn't find it. So Thomas McGee asked the question, then I think MJ voted for Phaedra. Otherwise, why the cliffhanger? So why such a cliffhanger here if it's going to be that Peter goes home? And Phaedra and Cade are then going to go up and murder somebody. Why not just get rid of Peter and then get the murder started for next week, since next week is the finale? And it is the finale. I'm on IMDb now. Like, it is the finale.
Is it a, like, 90-minute finale? Like, is it a longer episode?
No.
So I can see that. I feel like it has to be, because we are now starting this finale with 9 people.
Mm-hmm.
But it will be, the first moment will be flip over the vote. That person goes home. Likely Peter. Adrian Kate murder somebody. So right away we are down to 7. And then I guess we just speed through. I don't know. We just speed through it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe this article's wrong. Maybe these people are wrong, because I don't know. I think, I don't know. Anyway, doesn't matter. We'll figure it out. Let me ask you this, though. Oh, so no, Matt says, no, it's not the finale. There's 11 episodes in the reunion. So this article is wrong.
There we go. Didn't I just say, like, couldn't there just be 11 episodes?
And it makes so much more sense. I'm going to be real here because there's too much
time. I feel like there was just one more. Yeah, there was just one more. It fit perfectly for just having one more episode. So, yeah, we'll go from 7. We might even get down to 6. I don't know.
Yeah.
It depends how many people we'll do next week because we're going to get at least the banishment. Then we'll get a murder. And then
there'll be a banishment.
Whether they don't show us. So we could go from 9 to 6 or they can hold that for the top of the finale. I mean, either way, we're pretty much at 6 people left within 2 minutes of the finale. Either way, they decide to do it.
So
that works.
What is the avenue after, let's say you're right, and let's say that the handwriting is small and Peter goes home. What is the avenue post-Peter for the other players? Does Sandra have a game going on right now? Or is Sandra going to be playing a lot of Monday morning quarterback talking about what she was strategizing and how it made sense, even though in the game it wasn't making sense? What do you think?
I do think there is a world where Sandra knows that Phaedra is a traitor and wants to keep her in the game and then end her, and then she can get the money. I think that's very likely, and that she doesn't want to tell the other players that because she doesn't want to ruin the strategy or have other people, you know, that's her game that she's playing. Peter says that out loud when he's the other target. It doesn't make any sense. But I think, I mean, we know who Sandra is. She's a smart player. She's won Survivor twice. That's not luck. I think she is looking at how can I win this game. And we have gotten several confessionals, especially later. I almost wanted to say, like, especially post merge, it almost feels like. And I know we don't merge.
Say that, dude. Those traitors people are going to kill you.
I know. In the second half of this game, I think, you know, Sandra was really, really quiet early on. And, you know, we had a little thing with Parv because they were, you know, they had this rivalry and they got over it, whatever. I think now that Parv's gone and just what we've seen from Sandra is like, this is how I'm going to win the game. We've had those lines. So I feel like she is going to be one of the people in the finals. Now, whether she wins or loses, I don't know. But it seems like to me, she's just working up. She's becoming a bigger and bigger character each episode. We've seen her like be a target. We'll see how she deals with that. But I mean, I don't know. I think the question here isn't really about Sandra. It really is like, how does Kate not win? Like, I don't understand. Like, how does Kate not take this thing home? I mean, she really has to mess up here. And maybe there is something to MJ catching on to her at breakfast right away.
Yeah.
And just like that could be foreshadowing for MJ being like, guys, you know what? I think it's Kate. And she's the downfall and the traitors somehow win. We get maybe a charade. MJ, Sandra, winning group of traders, the three of them, and we see Sandra kind of spearheading that from a strategic gameplay perspective. Maybe that's possible. I don't know. I feel like Phaedra does not have a shot to win. I feel like she's going to be the default. Obviously, if she goes home instead of Peter, she has no shot to win. But even if Peter goes here, which I do think is likely, I think you either she goes next or do what Peter said, bring her to the end and then kill her then.
And then kill her anyway, just to make sure.
You're not letting Phaedra make it to the final group that says, I think everyone here is not a traitor. There's no way that happens, especially when it only takes one vote for one person to be like, yeah, let's vote. She's going to get the heat. She cannot win. So it's kind of sad. None of our original traitors are going to win this game. It's either going to be Kate or it's going to be the Faithful, which is insane.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I feel the same way about Phaedra that I felt about Parvati after talking about it last week, where it was, no matter what Parvati did at that point, she was still going to end up getting banished or like whatever before the end of the game. She was going to get banished before they said, yes, we will accept the cash. She was on everybody's radar too much to not have that happen. I think Peter's in a similar boat. And that's what I want to talk about, because if Peter goes home at the beginning of next week's episode, we're going to be talking about what happened after that. So we won't be talking much about Peter's exit. Let's say this is the end of Peter's game and Peter's going home. Do you like the way Peter played this game? And do you think that this is a blueprint for people to play the game in the future? Or do you think he played the game like shit and just played too hard?
I think there's some, I don't think you have to fall into like either of those camps. I know we were having a podcast and you want the hot takes and maybe some clickbait and all that, but I think you can look at Peter's game and say, hey, there's a lot of things he did correctly that I really appreciated and really liked, but he also made some mistakes that got him sent home. The trap that he laid out on the traders was absolutely brilliant. I think that was really fun. We hadn't seen that yet. Maybe it happened in some international versions, but you know, this whole idea where the traders don't know where the shields are, or like, can you gain that information? I think that's a big evolution for the show, as we talked about. So you got to give Peter props for that. I think one of his flaws was that he then told everyone his plan, got really pumped up about it. He made himself a really big target. He's spearheading the Faithful's Alliance. He got a letter to transition to a trader and turned it down. I think that is always going to be a deathly mistake. And he needed a shield to get through it anyway. That like, I'm going to give you a shield, the chain shield fire game, that was really poorly shot and edited, that game. He needed one or he would have died. So, I mean, he's kind of been lucky to even still be in the show. And again, I think he's already on his way out the door at this point. So clearly not like a perfect winning game, but you can still appreciate a lot of what he did. I think he had to have taken them up and said, I'm a traitor. That was his best shot to win. That was absolutely his best chance to win, because he was so faithful. And then, yeah, then now.
Then he started playing wishy-washy to the point where they all are assuming he made the jump and started playing with Parv anyway, just because of the things he was saying, even though he didn't. So he ended up playing the game the same way he would have played had he been a faithful.
Right. Or had he been a traitor.
Had he been a traitor. Sorry. Right. Yeah, had he been a traitor.
Right.
Matt here says what Will said. Pete had some great moves, but he also had his own downfall. Imperfect from a gaming POV, but kind of super compelling storytelling to watch him fall on his own sword. Yeah, Peter was definitely, I would say Peter is probably the best casting choice of the season. I mean, he really came out. He played the game differently than a lot of people would have expected.
I think you want people like Peter, and you want, if you're producing the show and you're casting the show, you want everyone who's coming on for season three, you're like, watch season two, play like Peter.
Play like Peter. Yep. Whether like you're a faithful or a traitor, play like Peter.
Like, exactly. You have to play the game. Don't play like Sheree.
Yeah.
Like,
who might win.
Yeah, who might. That's the problem with a lot of these shows. It's like big moves, big moves, big moves. It's like that doesn't really equate to, you know, success. I know Survivor tried to do that a bunch. It'd be big moves, big moves, big moves. Okay, you're a big threat now. You're voted out. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know? That's not really what the show wants, but they still have to. Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, it's hard. Ardog says, if Phaedra gets voted off, Kate must immediately murder Peter. I have a feeling she will recruit, though. Kate is in the perfect position to break up that Peter and Drishel alliance and must. If Phaedra gets murdered, does Kate have the option? Is Kate going to do the same thing that happened to Kate at the beginning of this episode, which is, here's your ultimatum, and then we get to go murder somebody?
I think if Phaedra is sent home here, Kate gets to probably just do a normal recruit. And if that person says no, you're still at the... I guess you need to get through people.
Yeah, I think there's...
It's tricky. Gosh, yeah. And that's another thing. Like, dude, if Phaedra gets banished, like... Does Kate just murder Solo? Do you think is there a world where that happens? It's now just, all right, eight people left. Kate, you're going to murder someone. Boom, we're down to seven. There's one traitor, and the story becomes, can Kate take this thing to the finish line without getting caught? Because if Phaedra's gone, Dan's gone, and Parv is gone, and someone still gets murdered, now the whole group's like, okay, there's still one traitor here.
One person,
And that becomes kind of the ending arc of these final two episodes. Is can Kate take this to the finish line with keeping the heat off her? I mean, that could be pretty compelling.
It would be very compelling. I actually very much agree with
what I would saying. Rather have that than have Kate get to recruit. We go through that song and dance again.
I agree. But if your theory is correct, it won't matter.
But then if they banish Kate when there's seven people left, then you have no, you just don't then have there's a show.
No
game.
Then it's just paranoia for no reason.
Unless then someone's woken up in the middle of the night, like Alan does a little shoulder tap as he does in the premiere. You are now a traitor.
And it's like, what if this will
for the finale? I mean, I don't know.
They got their 10 episodes anyway. What if they say, okay, Phaedra, you're gone. Kate, you got murdered. game's over. And all six of you do whatever. Like, that's it. We got our 10 episodes anyway.
But didn't we just say there's an 11th episode?
I mean, that's what this guy's saying. But, I mean, I don't know. I've been Googling it pretty hard. Where was that information?
Also, you know, for a show like The Traitors, I think that could be really fun. And I don't think this could ever. Maybe it could. You know, we are really modernizing television and streaming and viewership and all that. Like, we saw Netflix have a Black Mirror episode that's choose your own adventure, Goosebump style. So maybe this isn't that crazy. What if every Traitor season, you just don't know how many episodes there are? And it could end after, you know, obviously you're going to get at least, I would say, like 8 or 9 episodes in, even in a really heavy, faithful success season. Mm-hmm. But if every season could be, let's just say, between 10 episodes and 13 episodes, which are two very standard orders for TV shows, I think you often see in this premium streaming era, you see 10 episode seasons. Sometimes you see 8 episode seasons. But if it's like a scripted drama, it's like 10 to 13 is kind of the sweet spot. So I think if every season was 10 to 13 and you just didn't tell people how many episodes there were, that would be really, really fun, at least for the audience that's watching week to week. Obviously, when you get to, you know, the streaming and you go to episodes, it shows you how many episodes are available. That's part of how these streaming apps work. Mm-hmm. And so not everyone would get that luxury, but no one's getting that luxury anyway at this point. So it'd just be a nice treat.
And what is fun about it, if they want to go on a week-to-week basis and they only want to do 10 weeks, you can drop 3 episodes in the premiere week like you did this year. And now you have 3 episodes and then you can have 9 more weeks. Or you can have...
Well, it's not really about the weeks as much as it is about how much it costs. It is a budget thing. Like, producing 13 episodes versus 10 episodes costs more money, even if you shoot it the same when you're out there.
Even if you're shooting it the same
idea. Like, yeah, you're paying. Yeah, point. You're paying editors, yeah. You're paying producers, you're paying everyone in post, music, graphics, all that. There is an added cost, but I don't know. I still think it'd be awesome.
I don't think we'll ever see it, though. All right, last note here, Ryan.
We are kind of seeing it now, honestly. As I say this, I'm like, I don't know.
It's really hard to Google like, and find out.
We're podcasting this right now, and we don't know if the finale's next week or if it's the next week. So, hey, maybe this is what they are doing, and they're just not revealing to us how many episodes there are. So,
yeah,
I don't want to find out. For me, the spoiler, or if you can call it a spoiler, like, you know, pausing the
I mean, if it's there, it's there. That's not a spoiler.
Right. It's there. It's there. And we're going to find out the first thing in next week. Like, it doesn't spoil. It's not going to ruin your enjoyment of the entire episode, you know? Mm-hmm. If someone tells you who wins.
Honestly, Survivor, we don't want to know anyway. This cliffhanger, like, we live in an
instant gratification. We could literally know what it is and then just talk about this episode and then project on it. Really doesn't change. It's just when you're cut. It really would be the smallest spoiler ever. So.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Okay, last note from Ryan Chan. The contestants of Traitors get fed really well. That mac and cheese looked really good. Dude, why did people get fed so well?
Was that the first time? I don't know. I was watching. I'm like, we don't usually see that they have just like a buffet like that. Maybe
we've seen them eat a lot.
I feel like we don't see it that explicitly and then like really talking about what they're eating. It's always like they kind of walk, grab some food, and they'll set it down. And then we don't really highlight it. Or showcase the food. And it felt like this episode, the food was, you know, kind of top of mind for the players and for the show, kind of putting it in front of the audience.
Yeah, no, it was. And they've shown it before. That's where, like, the whole conversation in season one around.
Okay, well.
Yeah, oh, that's right. That's right. Well,
I don't know season yesterday. But yeah, we were also, now that the Traitors, you know, there's a lot of excitement around it. Phil and I were talking about doing some off-season content for the Traitors. So I think we might do a seasons ranking coming up here.
Of only the U.S. Survivors, only the U.S. Traitor seasons, though.
I haven't seen the other ones. When we do Survivor season rankings, we only do the U.S. ones. So yeah, we would just do the U.S. Traitors season rankings. I think it'd be a really fun podcast.
We're going to start getting it like really deep into Tim Heidecker type comedy now on this podcast, where we do like those types of those podcasts where like we're going to rank the best seasons of The Trust. We sit down, season one, and the episode just ends. You know, we're really going to start leaning hard into that. So get ready. Get your popcorn ready.
That is my favorite season of The Trust. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Hands down. No questions asked. All right, we're getting out of here. I'm done. I had enough. Thank you all so much for listening. If you haven't liked the video and you made it this far, please like the video before you stop. Doesn't cost anything and it really helps us. So please, please, please like the video. I feel like I'm begging. And I kind of am. Just like the video. Subscribe to the channel if you haven't yet and if you made it this far. If you're listening on one of the podcast platforms and you don't want to come over here and do this, hit that, you know, 5-star button on whatever it is, Spotify, iTunes, it doesn't matter. We appreciate that too. And we'll be back next week, next Thursday night, doing what might be the finale of The Traitors, what might not be the finale of The Traitors. Who knows?
We don't know. That's kind of fun.
On Saturday, we will be doing our final Survivor preseason game. So if you're here for the Survivor content as well, we'll be doing our fantasy draft on Saturday night. So tune in for that one as well. I'll have that up shortly. If you want to become a patron, patreon.com/thespecialist, you get to play in the fantasy game as well. So that's something you could do. It's only for the top tier, though, so make sure you check that out before you just sign up and say, where the hell's my link? Thank you all so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have Leaf Filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A Leaf Filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install Leaf Filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, Leaf Filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.